Eclipse Eve. You know, I guess that's a thing, right? It's Eclipse Eve, the Great American Eclipse of 2024. It was kind of neat thinking of it being that way. Have you heard about it? Well, yeah. You're like, well, yeah, you're a pastor. You've been yammering for a year. It's a little bit everywhere, right? Last week, it started really kind of picking up, and I think it's kind of neat seeing the yard signs. A house in Samaria had set up, and they have full of campers and RVs. They had neat little lights all set up, and it was like they're hosting a pretty cool event there. And so I've seen a few other signs out and about of people hosting. I think that's pretty neat. And have you seen the fear? Yeah, that's kind of been a trend of late, right? Calling out the National Guard. You know, you're taking that two way. Either that's allowing funding to be able to pay for overtime as officers work from 12 to midnight, you know, and doing all that. Or you can also see it spun as in, oh, is this control and what are they doing? You know, but they talk about that. You know, the governor's declaring the state of emergency for people. You know, so it's got maybe the unknown. There's people that are like, don't leave your house. And I would encourage you to get outside and look at it, you know, because there's some that are like, oh, you know, don't even go outside and look at it. You'll go mad. I don't think so. But buy 2 weeks of food, which I think you should probably always have at least that on hand, you know, but that's a good idea. And we bought enough for 2 weeks of food for one day, you know, so come and eat some. Or I'm going to be sick of chili. But medicine, stock up on that. You know, it's like, I usually buy mine by the month, so I'm okay. But I hate that I'm on medicine. But my blood pressure's doing better. I got a report the other day, and so the stress of printing gone, so I just have you guys, so thanks. About the don't travel, you know, I don't know. Like I say, some people are saying just don't even look at it, which, why? You're going to miss a fantastic thing. Now, don't look at the sun. That's dumb anytime. You know, it's not like an endurance contest. I'm waking. You're like, oh, now it's gone black. And like, no, you're blind. And so don't do that. And so some have talked about, and I've seen things like the eclipse is going to usher in 3 days of darkness. I don't know why. Why would it do that? I don't think so. Unless cloud cover is going to rain in Indiana in 3 days, that's possible. But the eclipse will trigger a New Madrid earthquake. I don't know if you've seen that one. That's right here. That's going on. There might be a little something with that, but we don't know. You can't say this is what that's going to do, but it's not. And I don't think it's because of the eclipse. It's because of something else. Some are saying that the eclipse will trigger the rapture. I hope so, but I don't think so. You know, that's like, it would be pretty cool. Light goes out and then lights come back on and where everybody go? You know, that would be pretty neat, you know, if I was doing it. But it's not up to me, and God's not that way. He's long-suffering, not willing that any should perish. And so the judgment of Nineveh, we've heard that one, right? Because we're Nineveh Township. You know, Nineveh is here, and that's going to trigger Bible prophecy that's going to usher in the end times, and it's going to start Armageddon. Way to go, Nineveh. But I don't... No, I can argue all those points against them for the whole morning. I think it's fear-mongering. I think a lot of it on YouTube's clickbait. You know, if you get a picture like this, I had to tell Bandit this morning, quit watching those. It's not real. It's just going to get dark. Take a nap. You know, that's my dog. He's like, but the picture looks so compelling. No, that's usually me. It's like you got some guy saying, well, watch and see what he has to say. But the eclipse does not usher in the last days. Because we are in the last days. Look at 1 John. 1 John chapter 2, and we'll be at verse 18. 1 John chapter 2, and verse 18. This is why, one of the reasons why I can always say anything confidently, like, oh, this shows that we're in the last days, because we're in the last days. Because John tells us that. And I can look at other places. But this one spells it out pretty specifically. Matter of fact, the first verse of Revelation, you know, Jesus says we're in the time is at hand. You know, we're in the time of those events. But 1 John chapter 2, verse 18 says, little children, he's speaking to the church. This is a letter to the church. It is the last time. And as ye have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now are there many Antichrists, whereby we know that it is the last time. Right there. If John is telling us that early on, one of the reasons I like John is that he has that kind of mindset. And he's like, we can tell you there's many false Christs out there. We have all these things around, but it is the last time. He tells them, well, we've been in the last time for some 2,000 years. We are always at least 7 years away from the consummation of all things, as the Bible calls it. We're 7 years away. That means we're 7 years away from Armageddon. We're 7 years away from the end of that. We're 7 years away from the new millennial starting. And so, is Armageddon starting tomorrow? No, we got 7 years before that can be triggered. You know, so I'm not worried about Armageddon starting tomorrow. World War III? Maybe. Is that Armageddon? Yeah, we can use it as a title, but that's not exactly right. I mean, because a lot of things I read kind of tell us that we are probably in the beginning of World War III already, and that it might usher upon us quicker throughout this year. And so that's other things we'll watch out for. Look at Matthew 24. We might be back here a couple times just because of what we're addressing. Matthew 24, verse 24. Matthew 24, verse 24. So there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and they shall show great signs and wonders, and so much that if it were possible, that they will deceive the very elect. I've never really looked at it in this light before, but lying signs and wonders, I think, will be miracles, true miracles. But I also think these false prophets, these false teachers, will use things in the sky or whatever else is going on and use them as a false pretense to say these things are happening or that is happening and try to stir up fear, to try to convince you, you know, that you should be scared and that you should have doubts and that you've missed out. You know, that's pretty much YouTube's business, right? You know, oh, you don't know, and here it is, and here's the secret thing. And I never envisioned YouTube in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, you know, when I'm reading this about these are going to be the false teachers, these are going to be the false ones, but everybody has a platform now, right? You can put it out there, and you're like, well, I can trust him. Look at, he's got millions of views. That don't mean you can trust him. That just means a lot of people have itching ears, and they've turned to him. The Bible warns about that as well. But what about the blood moons? We've had all the blood moons and the tetrads and the eclipse. We have all those. Those are celestial events that are happening. But do I think that we could use them as a way to align and say when things are going to happen? I don't think so. Because I think a lot of the events that they're trying to link in together, we have an event that we call a blood moon, and we've seen them and witnessed them here at the church and looked at them. You know, there's a few years ago, we had several. I don't think it's the blood moon that the Bible is talking about. I think that's going to be unique and special. It's going to be something different, not a natural occurring event that comes around. Look at Revelation 8. And I guess I was going to say this at the beginning, but buckle up, buttercup, because we're going to be flipping a lot. So, Revelation 8 and verse 12, because I've heard this one bannered about. Revelation 8 and verse 12, it says, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, and the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. I don't know if this is where they're getting, though. It might be 3 days of darkness, you know, that we're going to have all this going on from this text. Well, this is in the midst of the seven-year tribulation. We're not in the tribulation. I don't think it's describing an eclipse at all. The eclipse would not affect blocking out the stars. Matter of fact, when the eclipse happens, we should see stars, you know, because it's blocked out the sun. And so this is misapplying a text. And this is one of those that's called script torture, where you can pull a text out by itself, and you can make it say whatever you want. That's why you got to have context. You have to think of everything. It's like, what are they talking about when they're describing this verse? And so it's like, my blood pressure is probably more up as we've watched these things. I'm like, misapplied, and you're telling it wrong. That's not exactly right. Yeah, little information, and little information sometimes is dangerous versus having more information. That means, well, that's why we should study, and that's why we should know. And so, no, I don't think this is an eclipse verse at all. Look at Isaiah 13, verse 9. Isaiah 13. Isaiah 13, verse 9 says, behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellation thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold and even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. So this doesn't apply either. Does it talk about the sun and the moon and them being dipped? Yes, but it's not talking about an eclipse. This is talking about the day of the Lord. He tells you in verse 9. It gives you the context. That's why this other adage is like, never read a Bible verse. You want to read the passage. You want to understand where that Bible verse comes from. What's he talking about? Because like I said, you can pull it out. That becomes a pretext where you can pull it out and you can make it say whatever you want. This is the day of the Lord. It's not the rapture. That's different. The day of the Lord is to be feared. It is a dread day. It talks about there, life is going to be so lost that man is as precious as gold. How many of you have found a bar of gold? A piece of gold, a fleck of gold. It's like, I've looked a lot. I've moved a lot of dirt, and I maybe found a few pieces of dust. It's like, this. It's rare. He says, that's what men are going to be like in that day, because death is going to be upon the world. The rapture is called the blessed hope. That's a happy thing. It is called the glorious appearing. We are looking for it. It is a time of joy. It's not a horror story. It is something we're looking forward to. It's not a judgment, maybe on the lost because they've missed out. But not for us, it's the homegoing. It is the taking us to where we have been yearning for. It's a reuniting with a loved one that we've never met. You know, Jesus Christ, one that we've looked for and prayed to and talked about. And then it only reunites us with our loved ones and takes us to heaven. It is a day of joy, a day of rejoicing. It's the blessed hope. It's the glorious appearing. It's not the day of the Lord. That's different. And you have to be very cautious and differentiate between the two when it talks about these things. And so the rapture is not something we fear. Plus, that's all in the future. It's not an eclipse that's happening tomorrow. Look at Isaiah 24 while we're in Isaiah. Isaiah 24 and verse 21. Isaiah 24, 21, it says, "And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall punish the host of the high ones." Probably the angels and some of the people in charge that are on high, and the kings of the earth upon the earth. This is leaders being held accountable, finally, right? We yearn for that. It says, "And they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit, and they shall shut them up in prison, and after many days they shall be visited. Then the moon shall be confounded and the sun ashamed, when the Lord of the hosts shall reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before the ancients gloriously." This is talking about the last judgment. This is before the millennial reign starts. This is after the seven-year tribulation. And so it's not now. It's not an eclipse. It's not something that we've watched on a schedule as it comes. This is something different. There are seven big years of big things happening during the tribulation. They'll know. I won't say we'll know because I'm not going to be here. I think I'll be out of here. And so we are starting to see those events happen, and some of them are supernatural, and I think we're seeing a lot of supernatural things coming out of the darkness into the light. It's becoming more and more commonplace. I don't know if any of you saw J.D. Farage, but I know Dave kind of told me about him, and I've been watching because a lot of times he'd be like, he just preached your sermon, same thing you did this morning, and so he had a demon interrupt his service this week. You know, it was like it's kind of made its rounds, and you know, and he deals with it appropriately, which is pretty cool. But yeah, we're seeing more of those type things. And so we are seeing the lateness of the hour for sure. I have a whole podcast about that, saying that there are things that we can watch, that we can see, that tell us that these things are coming. I've made up some more of these. We did a thing at the locker on about Are We in the Last Times? And this here we called End Times Bingo. And so this is the End Times Bingo. It goes through and it tells you things that might be happening. It kind of tells us the trend of the world when the rapture happens. This here's the second coming bingo. There are specific things that have to happen before the Lord returns. They are totally different. And so we made it that way. And there's a little description on the back that you can get through on the table on the way out. And so a covenant must be confirmed with a world leader. A world government has to be formed. We don't have that yet. It's out of the darkness. They've let the cat out of that bag, and they are pushing for a world government to be formed. That is for sure. But we don't have it yet. You know, so that's not happening tomorrow. They're pushing all those things. There will have to be a temple rebuilt. We don't have the temple rebuilt yet. Are they pushing towards that? Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. The abomination of desolation has to happen before, you know, the second coming of Jesus Christ. Well, you don't have a temple to be abominated yet, but they will. The seas have to die. The waters have to be poisoned. The mark of the beast has to be instituted, where you cannot buy or sell without it. Are we there yet? No. Are we close? Yeah, we can see that shadow being cast all over the place as we get towards like a digital currency or some kind of ID mark, or where they add some precursor, whether subcutaneous or what. We're not quite sure how it's going to be administered or what it's going to be, but it's not a big leap for any of us to understand that there'll be one big unifying thing that's now accepted around the world. So that's coming. We see that shadow being cast forward, but we're not there yet, and so we're to sound the alarm on it. Look back at Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 4. Matthew 24, 4 says, "And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you." He doesn't want us to be deceived. He doesn't want us to be swept up. Are we to be watching these things? Yeah. So you're like, "Brian, you're the worst one." I am. Because I'm supposed to be watching and waiting. I am. Look at verse 25. It says, "Behold, I've told you beforehand." He wants to warn us. He's told us this in advance, so we get in it. I get excited. Believe me, there's much to watch for. There's much that are going on. There are trends. There are, like I said, lateness. There's things that are happening. And It's Later Than You Think podcast. Those things are there. And it's to motivate us to reach the lost. As I see those things approaching, it's supposed to get me out of my stupor. It's supposed to make me hot or cold. I don't want to be lukewarm so he spews me out of his mouth. It's supposed to stir me up to say, come on, it's getting late. It's later than it's ever been. We have to warn the lost. We have to tell them because time is running out. Look at Luke 21. Luke 21 is a parallel with Matthew 24, but it's written towards the church, the Gentiles. And so there are some big differences. That's why it's not mentioned as often. But Luke 21, verse 25 says, "And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity and the sea and the waves roaring." I will say, I think this is tomorrow. I think God is using signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars and meteors and tsunamis and all these different things, weird fish behavior, animals marching in circle. I think all those things are getting people to say, like, something strange is going on. Have you had people ask you that lately? Have you had people say that to you more of late? Is the Lord's return coming? Things are getting weird. God does do that. He promises that. And this is to us. Luke 21, we should study it more because it is to us. So he does things to shake us up and to wake us up, to show his strength. I think that's what the eclipse does. It's going to take people out of their electronic device and CGI, and is that a special effect or what? And we're going to stand outside and we're going to actually watch our sun be blocked out by our moon. It's pretty fantastic. Two giant celestial objects moved and in line here for us, that people will travel to be here. Well, it shows his strength. I can move the sun and the moon. Can you? We can't stop it. It's coming. You know, that's one of the things. This isn't a speculation. It's going to happen. It displays his grandeur. It displays his consistency, that he is the great clockmaker, that enough that we could study, we have a chart, that we know that there was an eclipse in Nineveh in 763, something like that. You know, it's like, it's not in the Bible when you read the Nineveh account. It's not in there, but they know that that was something that was going on around that time, that maybe God used that to back up Noah's thing. I don't know. I think it was at least 3 years probably apart, but enough that they know that there is a God in heaven and he preaches about the Creator, enough that they repent. More about Nineveh later, but it shows his, that he is, I guess it puts on display the wonder of his creation, and that he's in charge. It puts on display his power, his bigness. It is an event that you're supposed to go outside and look at and then be awestruck that the sun has turned out in the middle of the day, that we can say, who turned out the lights? It was God. It was God. It's to render every man speechless in that kind of an awe, like, wow. And that he would put it here and now for such a time as this. Acts 17, all over the place, right? That he knows where you live and when you would live and the things that you would see and encounter. And one of those would be an eclipse in 2024. That if you have enough guts to walk outside and to look at it and you have your glasses on to be prepared to see it, that you can see God's handiwork on display, his might and his power to move the sun and the moon. The only place in the known universe we know it happens, here, where they look about the same size, where it comes together, where we can study and we can have this discoveries unfold to us that we wouldn't have otherwise if this did not occur. We wouldn't know anything about the sun or its corona or the solar flares. We wouldn't know that they was going on or what to look for if it wasn't for that. I think if anything, it is something that he does in the sky to make people start thinking biblically. It puts God back on the table, like, oh, you've kind of discounted me, but what about now? That's where you and I have to seize the moment. That's where you and I are to be ready with an answer for the reason, the hope that lies within us. To be able to testify and point to God and say it was him. Now, I've listed a bunch of fears. 3 days of darkness, earthquake, which we did have one in New Jersey. And when the news is saying, it's really odd, and this is a strange and strange place for to have an earthquake of this magnitude that's going on, I would call that a diverse place. Matthew 24 does warn us about that. Oh, and it happens around the time of the sun being blocked by the moon. Could God be doing that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, God's all over that, saying, you ever heard of Matthew 24? Go read it. You know, and so he's trying to drive people to it, right? And to think about these things. Oh, the rapture. Like I said, we've addressed that. Armageddon. People are going to go mad, et cetera. We've looked at all that. We don't know. You know, I know it's not going to be Armageddon tomorrow. I don't know if the rapture is going to happen. It could be any moment, any time. But I think a lot of those things are probably fear-mongering. But there are some things that will happen, or at least scheduled to happen, that they're going to happen. One, there'll be an eclipse. that the sun will be totally blacked out. And it is a special event, and Dr. Faulkner will tell us about tonight, that makes ours a little unique, and so we'll leave that for him to describe about it. And I plan on enjoying it. I want to try to enjoy the most, and so I am trying to prepare myself to enjoy it, you know, so that I don't, I have the app, I'm going to have the volume turned on so I don't miss it. I'm like, ah, I'm supposed to do that experiment here, you know, so it's supposed to warn me. I want to see C1, that's called the first bite, you know, when it starts to cross over, I want to try to witness that. C2 is totality, when it's totally blocked out. We're not getting a ring around it. We're having totality. The moon is closer now than average, and so it's going to block it all out. C3 is when the sun starts to reappear. You'll appreciate that. Now it's on the other side, and look for the little things we're supposed to look for. C4 is when the moon is completely off the sun. So you're supposed to be able to notice the temperature change, you know, because the sun goes out. You should notice a slight variance in the temperature. It's pretty cool. There should be something called the eclipse breeze. And so we got something that's supposed to measure the wind. And so because the shadow's over there before it comes here, it should start cooling the air there and pushing the breeze this way. And so you can measure and see, you know, it's like, it's just be neat to see that, oh, it did that. We can measure it, so we've got that. We've got pinhole viewers. Joel's church is bringing some tonight that they've made, but I've made a couple. There's one that says Cornerstone Church, and Cornerstone, yeah. And they'll cast shadows, and then in the shadow where it comes, it'll make little crescents. It'll be on one side before the eclipse. It'll be on the other side after. Good photo app, opportunity to promote the church. Yeah, so we'll have that out there. I've also made one. Out of wood, it should make the state of Indiana in 2024, and I've got a little dot where we are, and it should project that on the ground, and so I want to try to make sure I get a good picture of that as it happens. You can also, you're like, well, I don't have a laser to cut holes in cardboard like you do, Brian. Who does? You can get a colander or a cheese grater, or you can even do your fingers like this and try to cut it out, a hole punch in a piece of paper. You know, you can do that. Aluminum foil, stretch it over and poke and make a picture of a cat or something. I don't know. You know, to do that, Joel's church had some. You should be able to notice your shadow, especially the closer to the eclipse. It should look weird. You should get a weird shadow. You can experiment it with the, if you held up a line this way or that way, they say you could do it. I'll have a one that's made like a Y. And depending on the angle of the crescent, it'll make a sharp shadow or a fuzzy shadow. And so that's what makes your shadow look fuzzier that day. As you're moving around, you can look at your shadow and see that it should change depending on how you are lining up with the crescent at the time. So we get a chance to look at that. Observe animal behaviors. They're going to think it's getting night. And they can perceive the change long before we can. You know, like we'll have glasses to be able to watch because they told us. If not, we'd be like, hey, where'd the sun go? You know, because we wouldn't be prepared for it. But the animals notice that it starts dimming earlier, and the birds will start flying around looking for their nest. Chickens start brooding. Bees all try to get back to their hive. And that crickets, they say, are one of the earliest, most sensitive ones. They'll start chirping if they're out. It might be frost didn't kill them all last night out there. There's also the Purkinje effect, where if you have like colors change, that's right before, like so red and green specifically, and so they sell shirts. I got two shirts, it changes it because at just before and just after, the way your rods and cones are looking because the light has changed, it makes these colors look different. You know, so I want to try to enjoy it, so I found some red and green shirts to see how that's going to go, and I also have a Batman shirt that's fluorescent green to see how that does, because who doesn't have a Batman shirt that's fluorescent green? But shadow bands is another one. I've got a big tarp that we're going to stretch out that's white, and it's at the 90 seconds, 60 seconds, and 30 seconds before totality. In that range, you're to look, and that's when it's supposed to make like, the way I've heard it described is like a mirage on the heat on the road, kind of. But it's in shadows, but they say they play differently. It looks like in waves, or they call them solar snakes, because sometimes they look like they crawl across each other. They do weird. They said it's very hard to film. It's something you can only experience when you're there, and so we're going to have it in front of us. Then hopefully if my alarm goes off, it reminds me, and I'm going, whoa, look at that. I remember to look down and see if there are shadows going across it, and hopefully the conditions are right here that we can see it. It's not guaranteed everywhere. It's got to be specific, but you know, if you don't prepare for it, you can't see it. So we're going to try. look for planets. There'll be seven planets lined up. My watch, I have the solar system, and yeah, they're almost seven of them are in a straight line. And by tomorrow, they'll be in a straight line, which is a lot of gravity. And that's why some think it might do something with earthquakes, but because you have a lot of things pulling on the earth going one way. So I don't know. I'm not fearful of it. But we should be able to see two with our naked eye if the eclipse goes as planned. We should be able to see Jupiter and Saturn. Those are the big boys. And so I've got my green laser. I don't point it at airplanes, but I'll point it at the stars and say, hey, look, there's Jupiter and there's Saturn. And then we'll point them out. But the other ones we might be able to see. You never know, especially if you have binoculars during that time. Neptune, Venus, Mercury, Mars, and Uranus. I had to practice saying that. Make sure you get it right. So I don't want to say it wrong because that's usually my favorite joke. And so I don't want to do that from the pulpit. But make sure we get that out there. And so I want to see that. We might also be able to see if conditions are just right, and they're hard to see even when you're like outside of Hale-Bopp. Hale-Bopp was a beautiful comet that we could see. Anybody remember seeing Hale-Bopp? I mean, I remember we'd come out, we had a perfect view, man. The last few that we've gone to see, and we've seen them, the tails are super light, and it's more of a time exposure picture you can see them than actually in real time. But it's 12P Pons Brooks. We might be able to see that, and you've all been hearing about it because they call it the Devil's Comet. So we might be able to see the Devil's Comet. They call it the Devil's Comet because as it's coming closer, it's made up of ice and dust and everything. The sun destroys it, and it makes these little tails. And this one makes two tails that kind of looks like devil horns. And so they call it the Devil's Comet. When I looked at it, it looked more like Starship Enterprise. It looked like it had the big disc and the two things coming off the back. I'd be like, it looks like Captain Kirk making a trip. But it only comes around every 71 years. And so it's going to be there in the sky up near Jupiter, I think. And so we'll try to see if we can see that, you know, during that 4 minutes. We're going to cram much in that 4 minutes that we can see it. So, like I said, we might need binoculars. It's going to be closer in June, so we'll have a chance to see it then. Something else we know that has happened during tomorrow during the eclipse is NASA will launch three rockets during the eclipse. And it's called the Atmospheric Perturbulation Around the Eclipse Path. And the acronym is APEP. Here's where it gets weird. NASA names things after pagan gods. They also have a very pagan origin, which pains me because I like rockets and space and all that. But think about it. They've named all their things, what, Mercury, Apollo, Gemini, the current ones, Artemis. Those are pagan gods. You know, a lot of times we're like, no, the Apollo astronauts. We're thinking of astronauts. That's Apollo is a pagan god that people worship from the sky. And we name them after that. All of our rockets, we have Orion, Atlas, Jupiter, Thor, Titan, Saturn V, you know, like Mercury, Minotaur, Taurus, Aries, and now we have SpaceX, the Dragon rockets, the Dragon capsule. that's kind of dark, you know, naming everything after these little g-gods, especially when a lot of your mission is trying to prove that there is no god. And the acronym APEP that they chose to do, which they could have done something different, they left an A out that is in there, but they made it APEP, is the Egyptian god of darkness and disorder. He is the opponent of light, and his image and the Egyptian representation is the serpent. When you see the serpent on the hieroglyph, that is Apep. That is the god of darkness, the god who opposes light, who fights Ra, who is against them. So it's not an accident that they name it this, but it's strange that they would name it that they oppose the light and they're going to do this in this experiment. So I don't know what they're doing. That makes it dubious to me. CERN, I think most of us know about the Hadron Collider over in France, Sweden. It's a big old thing, 300 feet below the ground. It's been dormant for 2 years. They're going to fire it up during the total eclipse where all the planets are aligned and everything are going, and they have been tied to a lot of strange things. Their logo, if you look at it, looks like a 666. You know, why would you do that? They have a large statue of the goddess Shiva, which is the Hindu goddess of destruction, the destroyer of worlds. Okay, and then we're going to fire up something, try to make a black hole. Sounds nice. Sounds safe. But they do that, and they have been... Their opening ceremony is demonic at best. If you've ever watched that, it is creepy beyond creepy. What they are doing and the things that they perform are like, this is a government? The leaked footage from their place around Shiva is where they perform a cultic ritual where they say they just killed an effigy of a person, not a real person. Why are you doing that anyway? I don't just go out for fun and act like I'm having a cultic event where I sacrifice a human. But I guess intellectuals think that's cool. And they smash atoms together, and they look for invisible matter as their whole goal. They're looking for invisible matter that powers the universe, that holds it all together. They call it dark matter. They call it the Higgs boson. They call it the God particle. I can tell you it's God. It's Colossians 1, 16 and 17. It is by him all things consist. He is the thing that holds it all together, and he's made it invisible. It's not there, but so that you would look for him instead of looking for this. But they are turning their mind inwards and this and doing dangerous experiments to do that. And so why all the cultish things? Why are you doing it on that day? I don't know, but it doesn't seem good. April 8th is also the anniversary of Aleister Crowley. He is the writer of dark and demonic books. He called himself the most evil man alive when he was alive. He called himself the Beast. He is a founder of dark religions. He met a demon on April 8th in 1904, and so they are celebrating that event, which is creepy. He met the demon was named Lamb. He looked like a gray alien, but back in 1904, which is odd. He wrote a book called The Book of the Law. He started the Thelma religion, which the Jet Propulsion Laboratory's founder was into big time. And so NASA's founding is in cultic practices, which is strange. But the main law that they wrote that's become the mantra of even Satanism is do what thou wilt. That's the one law. He wrote the Book of the Law, and their big law is do what you want. Satisfy yourself. You're the number one. Your high holy day is your birthday. It's all about you. And our world has embraced that pretty big. It's all about us. And so, yeah, it's strange at most. Are they, people suspect they're opening a portal? I don't know. Then the red heifer. Anybody heard about the red heifers? And so the red heifers, I've watched for a while. I mean, a while. It's a big deal. There's only been two that we've known of. And both times they were there to to be able to dedicate the temple. Because you have to have a red heifer, you sacrifice it, you mix the ashes in, and that's what they use to purify the instruments of the temple to be able to use the temple to worship the Lord. And so that's been one of the big missing pieces for the Jews to start the temple, is that they don't have a red heifer. We have three. We have three. And the day they acknowledged and said that they have three candidates is what launched the Hamas war on October 7th, because they see this as a portent of the end, because that means they're going to be reunited with their God. Hamas doesn't want that, and so they're trying to kill the Jew. They're trying to stop it. And they said one of the reasons, you can look at one of their clerics has made the declaration, is because of the red heifer. Now, these were bred in Texas by a farmer who tried to, and so they did, and so to have three, they've got spares. They plan on sacrificing them on Passover. And you're like, we had Passover. No, they messed up our calendar. It should have been at the same time, but we had Resurrection Sunday early. Passover's April 22nd, I think, if I'm right, but it's end of the month. And so they plan on doing it there, that they're going to sacrifice it to be able to get the ashes. I know I've read someplace, too, that they have to mix it with the other two ashes, which they found at the Dead Sea Scrolls. And so they have everything in place in there. And so to usher in the temple. Is that going to happen tomorrow? No. But I see it tagged together with the eclipse. But that is something to watch for, and we can go down deep and stay down long on the red heifer, and if you want to know about that, link a comment below. No, I'm not a YouTube video. Ask me about it, and I'll tell you. Or we'll have a class on it. And so, yeah, ring that bell, whatever they got to say. But the Jews want to do it to bring about Messiah. We don't need a temple. Matter of fact, to bring a temple into existence, kind of poking the eye of God. He sacrificed his dear son. And you're saying you need something else? You got to kill a lamb again? You've trodden underfoot the Son of God. Is there any repentance left for us for that? That is anathema. But again, it's one of the things that says will be in place as you read the book of Revelation, as Matthew 24, when Jesus says, when you see the abomination of desolation, take place in the temple, whosoever readeth, know and understand, run and hide. You know, and so it's going to be there. It's going to happen. Is this opening the door? Is it making the way for the beast to come onto the scene? Sure seems like it. So we have some things that are happening that are legit that can be watching for, but that just tells me, as the closer it comes to a temple being built, and the temple might be built before the rapture, you know, we don't know, we just know it's in place before it gets there. But It's setting the scene up for the Antichrist to come on the scene, the beast, to confirm a covenant with Israel that makes some kind of peace agreement, probably a two-state solution that doesn't require them tearing down the Dome of the Rock, that makes them where they can build the temple on the same mountain but over. I think that's why in the book of Revelation it tells them to measure it, but don't measure the outer court. It's defiled, because I think they are both there. But you'll see all kinds of YouTube videos saying, we got to destroy the temple. The Jews are going to destroy the temple. We got to kill the Jew. They're going to destroy the temple, and then that's going to bring worldwide anarchy. It's going to usher us into Armageddon. I think there's going to be a two-state solution, and they're going to have it both up around the hill, and they're both wrong. And that sets them up for the end time, and so we might see all those things happening, but that tells us the lateness of the hour, and that tells you and me that we need to be busy. Things are happening. Things are going on, and so we need to pay attention. It has nothing to do with the eclipse, though. And so, but again, this is a sign of the lateness of the hour. And as a prophecy dude, which I'm a prophecy dude, I'm not a scholar, I've never had an eclipse be on my list of things to watch for. It's not on here. It's on my list of things to do because I like them. And I think it's cool and I want to witness that. But it's not something I'm like, oh, if we can only get that eclipse, then they'll usher in the rapture. No. Nobody ever has. That's YouTube guys that's doing it for sensation here at the end. I watch for plenty of things, that's for sure. And I've made 9 videos so far and I'm just getting started. There are things out there. I'm just slow. But I think God does things to make men and women, boys and girls, notice Him and call attention to Him. So make them ask the question, who is He? And that God exists and He is there and He is real no matter what they've taught them in school. I think He does all that to make them say, who is God? Can I know God? Am I accountable to Him? It starts that. It's that moving that checker piece where they've moved. Now God's made creation. He's done a fantastic thing. Now man responds to that creation. Now God responds back. And some of that time His response is you and me coming up and asking Him, what do you think about that? What do you think about God? He does it through all kinds of things. Waterfalls, mountain ranges, birth of a baby, the ocean, the shores of an ocean, flowers, fields, a deer running across the path, a group of turkey in the field next door where you stand there like, who is God? He makes us like that. Canyons and sunrises, beautiful sunsets at Cornerstone Church that we get here. Stars in the sky that we can watch for, meteors, comets, and eclipses. It's the only known place in the universe where this happens. And we're in the best place in the universe to observe this one. Matter of fact, and that's not just saying, oh, Trafalgar, Indiana, or Nineveh, or where we're at. Earth is the best place in the universe to observe the universe. Where we are in our solar system is the best place in the solar system to observe the universe. Where we are in our universe is the best place in the universe to observe the universe. God put us in a place where He says, look and study me, find me, see that I am. And I can put that all in the breadth of my hand. We think how vast and huge the expanse of space is, and God's like, man, I can put that in the palm of my hand. He is mighty, and He is trying to draw men unto Himself that we might seek after Him and find Him, though He be not far from any one of us. The universe. Uni means one. Unicycle, right? You know, one wheel. Universe. Uni. One verse. Single spoken sentence. One single spoken sentence is the universe. In the God, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The universe. It's verse 1. It points to Genesis. It points to Him, even in its description. We need to praise Him and look at His wonders of His creation and acknowledge Him. And point to Him through this all. And that's what I hope to do by having the astronomer come tonight, to be able to point to Him and to say, God is wonderful and God is mighty. And we can have science behind this, but God is the mathematician who made all this work. Last 5 minutes. What about Nineveh? There's over 7 Ninevehs. Why Ninevehs? Oh, Nineveh, you know, they were going to be destroyed. They're this pagan nation. This is a sign to America and their pagan nation and how they are and how we are to be. We are that. We have 1,000 things that point to that. But that's not the message of Nineveh. That's not the story of Jonah. The story of Jonah was that God called a prophet named Jonah, a man of God, and said, go to Nineveh. And what did he say? No. What did he do? Where did he go? Tarsus, the far point of the known country of the world that he knew at that time, Spain. Some even argue that was Great Britain, the place of 10. So he thought maybe he's going as far as the known thing he knew of. He was trying to get as far away as he could. God asked me to go preach the gospel. Uh-uh. turning and running. Then he goes and he preaches the gospel because what? The great fish puked him out on the shore. Doesn't say he cleaned up either, so I'm thinking he looked like a sight. Probably smelled good. Marches to this town and just tells them, God's going to judge you. Judgment is coming. Then he goes and sits on the hill to watch the judgment. He's got a lot of passion in his message, right? God doesn't use the eloquency of Jonah to reach the people in Nineveh, does he? But he used the message of Jonah. He delivered the words. He didn't polish it. He wasn't fantastic. He didn't have a bunch of props, and he didn't shine lights and put on a wonder show. I don't even think he did an eclipse. I think the eclipse was earlier. He said that God is going to judge you. He's going to overthrow you. And he sat back and watched it happen. And God rose up a plant over the top of him, and a gourd grew, and he gave him shade, and it was a hot day, and he was so thankful for that gourd as he waited for these 40 days for the judgment to come. And then God creates this little worm, and the little worm eats into the vine, and it kills the gourd, and the hot wind blew across it, and it dried it all up, and it's gone. And he mourned, and he cried over that stupid gourd. And God says, there's a whole city of people. Apparently, they know their right hand from their left. There's a lot of innocent people. There's even cattle there. And I'm going to judge them all. And you wouldn't go and tell them. That's the message of Jonah. I think it's the message to you and me. Seven Jonahs. It's complete. Seven Ninevehs. It's complete. And he's saying to America, how many of us are doing something? How many of us are saying something? I've given you a call. Go forth and preach the gospel. Have we done it? Or are you like Jonah, sitting back, letting it all burn? Come quickly, Lord Jesus. Take him. Get him. I yearn for that, and I yearn for justice. But I'm to have compassion and long-suffering and be like my Lord and not have be willing that any should perish and to be motivated to preach the gospel. He even tells me from that story, I don't have to be eloquent at it. I don't have to be good at it. I can even not even be sincere to say, but Jesus Christ died for you. Repent and trust in him, you can have salvation. And God will do the work. It's not dependent upon me. I'm to be the sower throwing out the seed, some on rocky ground, some on good ground, some on the little shallow ground. God does the difference. I'm to give the message. I'm not to be running from God. I'm not to be lukewarm about it. I'm to be one out there proclaiming the good news of the gospel. Well, I might look like a fool. Look like a fool, for Christ's sake, right? It's for his sake. I'm not saying it in a swear way. I'm saying it in a legit way. We're doing it for Christ's sake. For the kingdom's sake, for their soul's sake, to preach the gospel, to put out of our comfort zone. We would be more upset over losing some of our comfort, a gourd or a plant or something menial that makes things nice for me, than for souls to be saved. I think that's the message of Nineveh, and I think that's the big swing and the miss we've had on the whole country. So thank you for letting us do something. Thank you for letting us print signs up and banners and tracts. And I'm embarrassed of the church as a whole in our area. We're the only one I know of. Blue River. Why are these churches packed saying, free, come here, we'll tell you about him. People are dying going to hell. What an opportunity. Pray God uses it. Pray God uses us. Thank you for passing out tracts. You can go with Lucinda and go down to the park today and pass out tracts. Going to invite all the people over to the camp. They're letting them come because our event tonight happens after all the Johnson County parts of, events are over. She was persistent and called them to be able to get enough for 60, 70 campsites to be able to pass out and invite them to come. Pray for tonight. If we get here early, let's park in the grass over there a little bit. Don't do donuts or Cheerios, Justin. But we can just park in the grass over there and then allow room for our guests to come in. If we have to stand up, let's offer our seat to a guest, someone we don't know. Let's be Christ to them, right? Let's reach out to them. Let's have concern. Because there's one way under heaven whereby men might be saved. The kindest thing we can do is to tell them. I know a lot of people use the excuse, well, if I don't tell them, then they won't be held accountable. They're held accountable anyway. There's a point on a man wants to die, and after this, the judgment. The soul that sins, it shall die. The only hope they have is if we offer them the rescue, and that is Jesus Christ. Let's be Christ to them tonight, to whoever comes, to whoever's here. Let's be great hosts. Let's pray about this. Let's bathe it in prayer. And let's try to use it as the best opportunity that we have for here and now. God's entrusted it to us. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for you.